Good evening. Thank you for joining us. This is the AFSC monthly program update call, and today we have Shan Creighton and Keith Harvey.
This is Shan Creighton. I'm the General Secretary here in Philadelphia for the American Friends Service Committee, and on behalf of all of us here, I would like to welcome you and thank you for your interest and your generous support of our work in so many ways. The call today is part of a series that we do to try to help our donors and supporters have a chance to hear directly from staff about some of the work that's going on here at AFSC. For those of you who don't know AFSC well or are new to our community, I'll just say that we're an inclusive Quaker organization that was founded in 1917, and since then we've been working for a world in which all people can live in peace. And we've understood that peace requires much more than the absence of war and violence. To build peace, we need to work for just social and economic conditions that are necessary to sustain peace. And we also need to have a care for the healing of wounds that have occurred in the course of violence that are done to people in their lives. I'm really happy today that we're going to be talking about a program that involves healing justice for Native American people in Maine. And we had hoped to have Denise Altvater, our staff person in Maine, talk about this. And Denise has unfortunately become ill. So we are lucky that Keith Harvey, who's the director of the New England program, is able to stand in for Denise and offer some insight into that program. I just want to say a little bit about truth and reconciliation. When we think about that, we often imagine that this is something that only applies in places like South Africa, where the history of apartheid and the struggle against it went on for so long, or perhaps Burundi or Cambodia, where there was a genocide or ethnic strife that left people wounded. But we have plenty of opportunities for truth and reconciliation here in our own country, where we have never really addressed some of the issues that the Native people faced when Europeans first came and then conquered this land. Just as we have not always addressed the trauma that was done to the African Americans who were brought here as slaves, and even after the Civil War, have dealt with some serious issues that really do require healing. So what's wonderful about the program that we've been able to do in Maine is to show that even after many years, even after the passage of a long time, it's possible to bring these principles of love and reconciliation into a community and really bring healing to all the members of that community. So with that, I'd like to turn this over to Keith Harvey, who I know will be able to fill us in a lot more on some of the details and some of the exciting and actually uplifting things that have gone on in that program. Keith?
Thank you, Shan. I want to just thank everybody for joining us tonight. It's a pleasure to talk about this work, and I hope I can do as much justice to the program work and in talking about it as Denise is a powerful speaker, and I'm kind of filling in for her, and just talk about the work and her time up there and our time up there as a AFSC and community. The Wabanaki program has a long history. And so back in 1954, we started working with Native communities in Maine, doing service, sort of that work camp project type work. And we helped build and repair homes, and we helped put in some of the infrastructure, water, electric, and stuff like that into the community. And so the Wabanaki Committee, there's a very strong committee that goes way back, has been together for a long time, and has just an incredible relationship with friends up in Maine and with the Native community. And so they were very instrumental in doing research and development of a book that we put together called the Wabanaki Curriculum Book that actually gave the real history of the Native communities up there. Then they later developed the program for youth work, where our Help Increase the Peace project was a major part of that work. And Denise also did many anti-racism trainings that included doing anti-racism trainings with the Maine State Prison Guards and the Department of Health and Human Service workers and educators. And so that's sort of the background of where the work has evolved over these last years. In 1978, the U.S. Congress passed this, what they called the Indian Child Welfare Act, ICWA, I-C-W-A, which codified higher standards for protection of the rights of Native children, their families, and their tribal communities. So within ICWA, the Congress stated that, and this is a quote, "No resource is more vital to the continued existence and integrity of Indian tribes than their children," and that child welfare agencies had failed to recognize the essential tribal relations of Indian people and the culture and social standards prevailing in Indian communities and families. And so when Denise Altvater, or Wabanaki staff, when she came on as program coordinator in 1993, Denise is a Passamaquoddy, and she works and lives in the Passamaquoddy Reservation in Pleasant Point, Maine. And I just want to say that Passamaquoddy, because they're all the way at the far eastern part of our country, Passamaquoddy also kind of means people of the rising sun or people of the dawn, because you're the first to see the light come up. And so she is from that community, and the Wabanaki people of Maine consist of about five Native communities: the Penobscots, they're on Indian Island in Old Town, Maine; the Passamaquoddy communities at Pleasant Point, where Denise and her office are, and Indian Township; and then the Mi'kmaq and Maliseet communities, mostly in the Houlton area, the very northern part of Maine. So, but as Denise did her work in 2000, Denise was contacted by the Muskie School of Public Service and was asked if she was willing to tell her story and her experience in foster care. And they were developing a video and also training track to help train Department of Health and Human Service workers about complying with the Indian Child Welfare Act, the ICWA. So Denise talked about how when she was little, state workers came onto the reservation. She and her five sisters were at home at the time, and her mother was not. And the people came in, took all of their belongings. She tells this incredible story of how they put them all in garbage bags, all their belongings in garbage bags, and herded them into station wagons and drove the kids away. And as she said, for a long, long time, she did not return back to her community. And Denise was about 7 years old at the time. So they took Denise to a state foster home in Old Town, Maine, and left her and her sisters and for about 4 years with a foster family there. And during those four years, the foster parents, I often get emotional when I hear about it, but there was some sexual abuse. They said they were starved. They did some really not so great things, being left in a dirt basement overnight as punishment. And so Denise's story is very moving, and she is very open in talking about it. But when she told her story to this group from the Muskie School, they asked Denise to join the group and help them develop the training and the training the video for state workers. And so she attended all the meetings with tribal child welfare workers, the Muskie School, the state, the Department of Health and Human Service workers. And within a month, she then began, they asked her to actually do the training. She trained over 500 state workers on helping to comply with the Indian Child Welfare Act. Well, she continued to work with the group for a whole bunch of years, and probably after about 7 or 8 years, they developed this really strong bond as a group, as a committee with each other. And it was at that point that they decided that they cared enough about each other, and this is kind of an important piece, that they cared enough about the work that they were willing to take the next big step. And for them, the next step was to go back and take an honest look at Maine's history and what they did to Native people. Because the government, what they did was a purposeful act to take Native children and put them in white homes in order to strip them of their language and their culture. Now, it was, as Denise often says, a well-meaning effort that they, the government, thought they were helping Native children survive the greater society. But, of course, that was not what happened. And even though this working committee knew that what happened could not be undone, they believe that they did that if they did this work in a meaningful way, understood the history, and not in a superficial way, they could move forward to a place of love and forgiveness. And so what happened was they embarked, and we embarked as AFSC, fully supporting Denise in this truth and reconciliation process. And it is the first truth and reconciliation in this country that is dealing with child welfare systems in the United States. It also is the first truth and reconciliation between governments, the United States and the sovereign tribal nation. Often we forget that the tribal communities are separate nations. And so this is a sort of a government-to-government understanding. And as far as we know, because we've done work with the Transitional Justice Center in New York City, it is also the first that has been developed collaboratively between two opposing parties. And so it's the state, the tribal communities, and they developed this process and are moving forward completely together. Now, there are three major goals that come out of this process. The first is to uncover the truth and experiences of Wabanaki people and what happened to them in the system. The second is for the Truth Commission to make recommendations for structural changes that will improve the way Wabanaki children and their families are treated in the future. And the most important and final goal is to give Wabanaki people the place where their voices will be heard, a place where they can heal, and where they can be believed. And that's in the end, Denise says this so clearly, is that often they tell their story, nobody believes them. And they want to provide that safe place where you can truly tell your story and people really understand and people believe you. Denise and the committee strongly believe that it also will help to undo the racism and oppression that allowed this to happen in the first place. And it will help us to understand and deal with why it happened, how it happened, and what ways the trauma that has been passed down generationally has impacted all of us today. Out of this whole beginning process, as they developed all of this, they put together what they call a convening group. And that group, for the last 2.5 years, has planned the process. And so Denise is a member of the group, and they developed a declaration of intent. And this declaration of intent was signed this last May by the governor of Maine and the 5 tribal chiefs and Denise. And so this was a binding sort of document to say we really are going forward together on this, and we really want to make this truth and reconciliation process happen. Now, I want to just stop and tell it right here for a second and just say the governor of Maine is, how can I put it, very conservative and kind of controversial. And so this is sort of strange bedfellows that sort of are around. There was a thing that the governor of Maine said about the NAACP that was really send people really upset, and he said that the NAACP could kiss his I'll say the nice word but anyway, it was really controversial, and he's kind of on the right conservative heavy right side of things, but the governor has been really strongly supportive of the Native folks and this process, and he has gone out of his way to help make this happen and forge this bond between the communities and the government. So this is unique, and I think that's a tribute to the convening group and the work of the commission to really bring people into the process earlier on and be really understanding of what's going on here. So what has happened with the convening group is that we've developed community groups in all 5 Wabanaki communities, and we've had to do trainings in these communities for them on the Williams-Briggs transitional framework. This is an important framework, and it's a way of helping people understand how to move from change and loss through a process so that you can emerge into a place of hope and forgiveness and healing. And so we've also trained them on implementing peace and healing circles in their own communities. And this is a really important part of the process because this speaks volumes to our healing justice work. But it also is easier for the Native communities to adopt these roots, to adopt these practices, because the root of our healing and justice work comes from many traditional Native practices. So the healing circles, and often those healing circles are used with eagle feathers, and it's just part of the community does these a lot, and so this was a natural transition for them. They're now, right now, in the process of developing the mandate. Now, the mandate will tell the Truth Commission exactly what they're being asked to do and outline for them, and then they will start doing the research and going into the communities and hearing the testimonies, and start to put together their own record of what happened and what needs to happen. And at the end of this process, the commission will write a full report of its findings. Also, a small archive committee will be formed to work directly with the tribes to determine how to save and document all the testimonies. Now, these testimonies will be a variety of ways. It's not going to be just one way. Some will be audio. Some will be written. Some will be videoed. Some will be in a more public formulation. Some will be individual. And so they're going to be doing it in different ways so that people are comfortable and feel in a safe space to tell their story and what's going on. But I also want to say that just can't emphasize enough the important piece of this work is the healing for the Wabanaki people. It's time for the community sort of to, you know, Denise is so clear, to start healing from some of the historical policies and historical traumas that the government has imposed upon them and the ways in which the governments have tried to eliminate and assimilate Native people. But how important it is to take control, that those communities take control of their lives, and that this is exactly what they're doing as they go through this process. I want to tell one little small story, and then I'll shut up, and folks can kind of ask questions of me. I've been fortunate to be working. Me and Denise kind of came in together. I think I've been on staff about a year longer than Denise, so we've been working together for over 19 years. And so oftentimes I've gone up, and I've gotten to know so many of the good people working up there in the different communities. And I was invited. Denise said, Keith, come on up. We're going to be, you know, meeting with all the different tribal councils, and we're going to be explaining what we're trying to do, and we're going to try to begin to set up these community groups and circles and the whole bit. And so we went to the Penobscot Tribal Council, and so we were in front of the tribal leaders, and, you know, and the group was sort of explaining the process, and I'm sort of on the side. And as they talked about the process, and how they were going to do it and how they needed to have the folks from the community hold the circles and to be able to do all of this work, the tribal leaders who were in the room started talking about their own stories and the things that happened to them or happened to family members. And we spent a good hour and 45 minutes, 2 hours, as everybody began doing right there in that room what we were planning to do with the larger community. And oftentimes each member would say, you know, I've never told anybody this, but this is what has happened with my, you know, with my granddaughter. This is what has happened with, you know, when I was growing up. And this is what my mother told me happened with her. And it was just very powerful. And it was a real learning moment. And it was hard, but also there was a relief in the room of people just being able to tell their story. And it was a learning moment at the time. And I think part of that learning moment was that we realized that when the convening group came back together and we kind of debriefed, they realized that they really needed strong support, both traditional and more conventional support of folks to be there, to have folks there after people tell the stories, to have support and community support to be there for people after that, because it can take a lot out of them. But also that they realized they needed to have a support mechanism for the tribal, for the Truth and Reconciliation Commission members who are hearing it. Because after we heard just a few stories there, actually it was more than a few, there probably was about 15, 16 tribal council members, and most all of them spoke. But in hearing those stories, you kind of need support coming out of that, too, just hearing it and listening to all of the different stories. And so I think they hope by this summer to really begin taking the testimonies and having folks in the place where they can tell their stories. And this is just some incredibly powerful work and goes right to the roots of our healing justice work and what we mean and how we want to do true healing work to help people come through that trauma, not just people, but the communities to come through that trauma. I want to say one other thing is, and Denise is clear about this, she believes that the trauma that she went through and others, that without the healing to really truly take place, it gets passed down generation to generation. And so those kids and the new children that are now on the reservation are affected by that trauma because it gets played out in homes and families all around. And so they just feel, it's a true feeling that to truly heal, we need to go back. We need to do this reconciliation process, and this will open up avenues for people to then begin to move forward. So I will stop there and take any questions that I can try to answer as best I can.
We had received some questions in the mail ahead of time, some of them related to the work in Maine, and some of them related to other issues for Native people in the U.S. and Canada that we might not be in a position to really talk about. But I'd like to open it up to people who are on the call and see. We've unmuted the line, so if you have a question or a comment or something you'd like to share with us, please speak up.
I will say this, Chan, that on our website, it's afsc.org/office/Perry-Maine. That's where the Wabanaki Program website is housed. There is a link in New England. We did a very similar thing that we're doing tonight, a phone series called The Haves, The Have-Nots, and The Beloved Community. And we have a recording of Denise talking about some of what I said tonight and the TRC and her work in the Native communities in Maine. So if people go to that website, you can actually hear her voice and have a few pictures of her there, too.
One of the questions that had come up that I found, I wonder whether you know the answer to this, is whether there were any scholars or journalists or others who had been interested in picking up the story about the Maine tribes and this truth and reconciliation process. Because it is such a wonderful story, it would be great to try to get this picked up in other ways. Living as you do in Cambridge, there would seem to be no lack of scholars in your community. I wonder whether you know any who might be interested.
I heard that through the Muskie School up at the University of Maine in Orono, there are a number of people who are interested and are watching sort of the process, and will probably follow up not too shortly after the commission releases its report.
One of the things that this story reminded me of, too, is the power of speaking out. And I'm thinking of two examples of this that have to do with the Japanese-American community, and it's a community whose culture doesn't necessarily easily go public with some of the hurts that have happened. But right after September 11th, there was a wonderful rising up of people from the Japanese-American community who had been part of the World War II internment process, who spoke on behalf of the Muslims in their community who were being targeted as a result of September 11th, and spoke about the importance of not doing this kind of racial targeting. And there was a great power of just having them tell their stories and seeing the release of that. And it's an interesting thing that we have been reluctant sometimes as a country to let people have that forum. Are there things that you think we might be able to do here at AFSC, Keith, to make this opportunity for speaking up and telling your story a more widespread part of our programs?
I wish I had a magic sort of process or way to do it. What I do know is that, and we're pretty good at doing this, is to be able to create that safe space.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in creating that safe space sometimes takes some time to do. But once it's created, I think it provides an opportunity and a place for people to truly speak freely and to be able to do that. And I think the on-the-ground work is establishing those relationships, those trusted relationships where this can happen. I think part of what happened here, as Denise has said before, it was this group that took a chunk of years where they really began to love each other to take that next big step and to be able to hear some of the hard stories and to be able to begin to do some of this work in a larger way.
Is that a question? Good.
Do I gather from what you have said that the safe place does include professionals, because usually abused women or children suffer for years afterwards, and although reconciliation can come, there needs to be place for the anger and the hurt and also other such things to express themselves safely. And I wondered what sort of staff you had at the safe places in order to make it possible for people, if necessary, to come back again and again and again until the pain is finally worked through and they're ready for the reconciliation.
Yes. A part of that, and that's the really good part about working with the state of Maine, is that there will be professionals in the process, and that as each individual begins to tell their stories, there may be times and places where we can refer people to more professional help. There are some in the community that will want some of the professional help, but also using tribal healers to help them also through the process. So it's a multi-place where people can feel comfortable in doing that. But absolutely, that was an important part as we worked through this work.
Yes, I think it definitely has to be multifaceted because they're working from so many sides on this trauma.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I want to say also that part of the process, and there's a few families that are willing to come, who were foster families, to come through to talk about some of their experience and what their experience was in this process, too. All the experiences weren't bad, but there were, from what we heard, there was quite a bit of the bad, but there was also some good in some of those foster experiences.
And, of course, by definition, if you take Anna Freud's book on children without families, when they took them from their families to protect them from the London Blitz, that really it was more harmful often to the children to be removed from their families than to suffer the bombardment, which I think shows the intensity of feelings involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I'm glad there were some nice experiences, or parts of the experiences were positive.
And I also think it is important in real healing and reconciliation to have a space for all of the partners in the process to really come together. And one of the things we're doing truth and reconciliation work and work in Burundi with some of the peace villages, where they're bringing together former combatants and those who were victims of the violence. And that is an important part of the reconciliation that needs to go on. And so it's tough to do real reconciliation in a one-sided way. So I'm appreciative that some of those families in Maine were willing to come forward. And I've heard Denise talk about this too, and that they also have things that guilt and issues that need to be healed and dealt with in order to really bring true peace to the community.
So are you suggesting that even the parents who were abusive to the children whom you were mentioning do actually come forward with some sense of regret?
Keith, maybe you can speak about this more, but I believe I have heard Denise talk about people who were involved in separating the kids coming
yes.
out, speaking about some of their guilt and regret in the process.
Yes. Yeah.
That I can see, because I think that one can do, in quotes, innocently when you really think you might be helping them. But surely the parents who abuse the children, at least I hope they had enough moral sense to know that what they were doing was wrong. And how do you reach out to them to change?
Yeah, I know there'll be a large outreach I don't know how they plan to fully do that. I think some of the state will contact those former foster families to give them an opportunity to be able to speak about their experience. But I don't know about the ones where the abuse actually happened or anything like that.
This is Jim Matlack in Rockport, Maine. Can I offer a few comments for context? I think Keith did a magnificent job of summarizing the program as I know it and the rather remarkable nature of the endeavor, which really has almost no precedent, as I'm aware, in terms of U.S.-based tribal peoples being part of this sort of an effort to really get the story told, especially the horrendous detribalizing, deculture efforts that marked most of our history, federal and local governments, from the very beginning of the European intrusion into the New World. I have acquaintance with this mostly through my involvement with a group that's part of the Quaker presence in the state, the Friends Committee on Maine Public Policy, which Ed Snyder set up some years ago, which focuses on legislative activity at the state level, not national, and from the very beginning has worked on two areas, criminal justice and Native peoples, tribal issues, and continues to have that relationship to the tribal issues, and have had opportunity in that context to get to know Denise a bit, and what a magnificent woman, leader, exemplar, and witness giving testimony to her own experience, which just profoundly moved us. Part of what developed out of her describing her experience and then describing her work with youth and even adults in the tribal situation, coming off the damage done by some of these arrangements that simply took the kids from the home, from the tribe, from the cultural setting, and consciously tried to eliminate that whole aspect of who they were, they come out damaged, not surprisingly, and the issues of addiction, substance abuse, alcohol and beyond, become much more prominent, dominant, much more a part of what they have to struggle with in later life, including, as Denise described, in her own family. So that to try to get a healthier starting point, not just to quit doing the old practices that were so abusive and exploitive of the kids, but to try to take some of the ones who went through it, and as Keith was explaining, give them a chance to be, in a sense, recognized for what they endured, what they survived, what they have had to come to terms with, to do it openly, honestly, and lovingly, gives some prospect of getting at some of those very deep-set addiction patterns that continue to be a major problem among the tribal people.
Yeah, it's a problem that they continue to struggle with. And when you're up there with the community, that community wants to figure it out. They're working so hard to be able to make some of these changes and to try to, you know, deal with the drinking and the drugging that sometimes is there in the community. Yeah.
I would say the context of having a really right-wing governor who is retrograde on practically everything Quakers have a concern for, the exceptions are an issue like this where his own troubled childhood gives him a base to respond positively to the kind of program that the Truth and Reconciliation proposal represents, and he's come through very strongly to be helpful and supportive of it. And I would also say that with Denise, we've gone in and talked to the Commissioner of Corrections that he appointed for the state with really low expectations. This fellow came out of a background of prisons for profit, Joseph Ponte, and we found instead someone who was remarkably open to the message and the concerns we wanted to bring. And so it's another area of genuine surprise that Governor LePage has put someone open in the position Ponte holds, who's very open to work with Quakers and work with other concerned groups and citizens in a more constructive way than we ever imagined was likely.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jim. I couldn't have said it any better. That's
wonderful. Are there any other questions or comments from our callers? Keith, is there anything else you'd like to add as you've heard these questions and thought about some of the work?
There is one piece, because some of the, when you see some of the Truth and Reconciliation stuff, you'll see that the schools, sort of the tribal schools like Carlisle, was also part of trying to do away with the culture of the native folk. I think it was Jamie and some other folks were saying that the overwhelming most of the folks, it was through their foster care experience that really impacted the tribal communities in Maine, and not so much the schools. The foster care was the big part of where a lot of sort of the healing needs to happen from that experience. But I do want to just to let folks know that, you know, the website, afsc.org/office/Perry-Maine, and you can see a little bit more and learn a little bit more about the program, and also have some audio links of Denise talking about the work that she's done and the TRC process here. And so that's what's going on here up in New England, and some of the work that we're doing on the Native communities.
Thank you for making yourself available.
Right. I have one other thought about this that your story has raised with me, because I think we often have had systems that have done great violence to young people, to children. And the sad thing is, I think we have some systems right now operating in this country that are also taking children away from their parents. And I'm thinking about the kind of detention that goes on amongst immigrant families and the separations of families that have forced the deportation of a parent who's not a citizen while the children stay here. But I'm also thinking of the incarceration of parents of young children that happens in such a mass way in so many of our communities. And I was just at the Quaker UN Geneva office, where they have been working with the United Nations on the rights of children, and particularly looking at the impact of incarceration on the children of those who are incarcerated. And I think this is an opportunity for us to think about, too, as we continue some of our work in healing justice that takes us into the prison, to reach out to the families and to see ways that we might be able to recognize and support the children who are, even today, being separated from their parents and put into foster care and exposed in some ways that are not helpful to that kind of trauma. But that we have some tools available for reconciliation and healing, and I'm really glad that you've been able to do this wonderful work in Maine, and I hope it will be an example and an inspiration for other organizations and for inside our own organization as we continue to deal with these issues. So thank you all for being on the call. One last chance for any final thoughts from our callers.
I don't have a question, but I would like to tell everybody that along with this work, we also have a staff person by the name of Pedro Rios out in our San Diego office who assisted in a PBS program that's going to be airing tomorrow on a television program called Need to Know, a look at border violence, and AFSC played a big part in this as well. And if you check your local listings, you can see what time it airs tomorrow in your area if you're interested in that as well.
Thank you, Tay.
No problem.
I hope everyone has a wonderful evening. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you'll be with us again on a future call.
Thank you.
Good evening, everybody.
Thank you all.